Hello, everyone. It is really good to see you all on this beautiful June day in the summer. The summer has always been one of my favorite seasons, but actually, I think that's changing. I think every season is my favorite season, but still, I have that memory that most of my life, summer has been my favorite, so it's nice. But I like fall now, I like winter now, and I like spring, so... We are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, but before I get started, I'm going to play a song. This song is a song about absolute surrender. The name of the song is If It Be Your Will, and it's written by Leonard Cohen, performed by the Webb Sisters. But if you haven't heard the song before, if you listen to it, you'll notice he's saying, even if I can't sing, which singing, of course, would be very important to him, even if I can't sing, whatever your will is. And that level of surrender just, that feels extremely genuine to me. That level of surrender where you literally surrender everything, like Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane, and say, not my will, but thy will. So that's what this song is all about. Enjoy the song.
It was a while ago, faced with some obstacles, that I wrote a song. Well, it's more of a prayer. And I'll give you the first a few lines, and then Neil Larson on the Hammond B3 and the Webb Sisters will unfold the song. If it be your will, that I speak no more, and my voice be still as it was before. I will speak no more. I shall abide until I am spoken for, if it be your will. If it be your will that a voice be true, from this broken hill I will sing to you. From this broken hill all your praises they shall ring. If it be your will, so let me sing.
If it be your will to make
out here in tribal wealth, the sublime Red Sister.
Isn't that beautiful? I love that song. All right, so again, we're here for the guiding light, and I'm sharing from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And we're kind of in the middle of a conversation, and it's been 2 weeks because I was not here last Sunday. So just a little bit of a reminder of what we were talking about. We were really talking about how consciousness, or what some people would call God, how consciousness is all that there is. And so, of course, there is no independent person. And so the independent person that you feel that you are is just an interpretation of your experience. And actually what's happening is whatever is arising and whatever is occurring now is the unfolding of the manifestation that comes from consciousness, and that it's automatic. Again, those of you who know Buddhism, who've taken the MPP Buddhism class with us, you know it as interdependent co-arising. And we were talking about how everything arises naturally. For instance, in the last week, I have been very excited about getting a retreat house. Very excited. And, you know, if you were really to look at the apparent evidence, you know, there isn't so much reason for that excitement. You know, the apparent evidence is, you know, we still don't have the money, et cetera, et cetera. But the excitement is just happening on its own, right? It's just happening, this excitement, and I'm just getting to enjoy it. So is the excitement really an individual thing? Or is the excitement what's arising through consciousness as this unfolding is occurring? And am I just the witness and the enjoyer of the excitement? And basically what we talked about is that the excitement is happening on its own. And consciousness, am the witnesser and the enjoyer of the excitement. It's like watching a movie. It's like we are in a 4D movie. Have you ever been to Disney World or any place else where they have a 4D movie? I think almost everybody has been to a 3D movie where you put on the glasses and it looks like things are coming at you. But if you go to Disney World, they have these 4D movies. So what they do is they have these seats that are rigged along with the film, so that when something is happening in the film, you see it and you feel it in your seat. So, for example, if there's a mist in the movie, on the film, you know, it's a misty day, there'll be mist coming down from the ceiling, and you're sitting there feeling the mist. If a rat runs across somebody's foot, there's something under the seat that creates the feeling of something running over your foot, you know. And if there's an earthquake, your seat shakes. And so they call it a 4D movie because you aren't just watching it, but you're experiencing it directly, right? And that's really what's happening here, is that consciousness is manifesting as a variety of experiences through the creative principle. But it's like a 4D movie. We aren't just seeing it, we're feeling it, both inside and out. You know, like if anger arises, you feel the anger. If excitement arises, you feel the excitement. But what Ramana Maharshi was explaining is, there doesn't need to be a person or an operator. Like, there doesn't have to be a Regina that thinks the right thoughts in order to create this feeling of excitement. The excitement arises because it's time for the excitement to arise now. Everything is occurring automatically through interdependent co-arising. So that's what we were talking about 2 weeks ago, and that leads us up then to the next question that the questioner has. He says, I'm not confusing the body with the operator. Because remember I just said there doesn't have to be a Regina here to think the right thoughts in order to create the excitement. The excitement is arising because that's what's happening through the creative principle, through interdependent co-arising. You know, so at some level he's saying, okay, I understand what you're saying. He goes, I'm not confusing the body with the operator. Rather, I am referring to Krishna's words in chapter 18, verse 61 of the Gita. The Lord, O Arjuna, dwells in the heart of every being, and he, by his delusive power, spins round all beings set as if on a machine. Again, I'll read that quote from the Gita. The Lord, O Arjuna, dwells in the heart of every being, and he, by his delusive power, spins round all beings set as if on a machine. And Ramana Maharshi responds, the functions of the body involving the need for an operator are born in mind. Since the body is jada, and I'll look that up in a moment, since the body is jada, or insentient, a sentient operator is necessary. Because people think that they are jivas, Krishna said that God resides in the heart as the operator of the jivas. In fact, there are no jivas and no operator, as it were, outside them. The true self comprises all. It is the screen, the pictures, the seer, the actors, the operator, the light, the theater, and all else. You are confounding the self with the body, and imagining yourself the actor is like the seer representing himself as an actor in the cinema show. Imagine the actor asking if he can enact a scene without the screen. Such is the case of the man who thinks of his actions apart from the self. So, you know, there's this idea of God as a being, right? You guys are familiar with that idea, I think. You know, people joke the old man with the white beard in the sky, but you know, many people have certainly matured beyond that idea. But yet, even if they've matured beyond the idea of the old man in the sky with the beard, they often still think of God as a being that is kind of looking at what's going on in the world, judging it as good or bad, or what he wants or what he doesn't want, making decisions, and then, in this case, moving people around according to his will. And again, if we listen to this verse from the Gita, you can see how someone might get that interpretation from it. The Lord, O Arjuna, dwells in the heart of every being, and he, by his delusive power, spins round all beings set as if on a machine. So I was talking about the retreat house. So, and I speak this way sometimes, but it's just because, you know, the truth is too hard to speak. If you guys know, if you've been following the conversation about the retreat house, you know that we found a place that just calls to us. It's called Big Wall Ranch. And Big Wall Ranch is a 450-acre ranch. Just absolutely beautiful. And we just really feel called to it, and we've had the pleasure to be on the ranch several times now. However, recently, someone else made an offer on the ranch which was accepted, and it is currently under contract, although the contract is contingent. And, of course, in addition to that, we don't have anywhere near the $3 million required to buy the ranch. There are also some other lovely places in La Vida, you know, that range from the $500,000 to $900,000 range, which are kind of, you know, if you consider $3 million the high priced, then these would be the median price places. And there are a couple of them which are really lovely. Don't call to us in the same way that Big Wall Ranch does, but they're very nice. They feel really lovely. They would make great, great, great retreat centers. There's just no doubt about that. And then we recently ran across a place in about the $350,000 range, which really has very little property, would take very little upkeep, but it's right next to a lake. So like there's lots of land right around that can be used, but it's not owned, you know, by whoever owns this house. And so I look at these three different options and I joke, if God thinks we're ready for, you know, if God thinks we are ready for Big Wall Ranch, we will get Big Wall Ranch, 450 acres. But if God thinks we are ready for a medium step, like we're not ready for that big of a step, but we're ready for a medium step, we'll get one of these smaller ranches or smaller acreages, which are in the $500,000 to $900,000 range. Or if God thinks that we need a real, you know, just a real beginning step because we have lessons to learn, then we'll get the smaller $350,000 house. But that talking is merely symbolic. And if anyone thinks that there is a being that is looking at us and judging whether we are ready for Big Wall Ranch or whether we need to take a medium step or whether we need a baby step or whether we're not ready for anything at all, that's a mistake. That operator also does not exist. 2 weeks ago when I was here, we talked about how the individual person as the operator does not exist. But God, as the operator, does not exist either. Everything is just happening through the attention of consciousness and the creative principle. It's just occurring. There's no one making decisions about what may or may not be in the best interest of the whole, and then moving the pieces around in order to accomplish what it has decided is in the best interest. When we talk that way, which I talk that way too, that talk is purely symbolic. And so this is what Ramana Maharshi is now saying. So 2 weeks ago, he was explaining there's no individual operator within each body. Although we may perceive that we are operating this body, there is no individual operator within the body. That is a misunderstanding, a misinterpretation. And now he's saying there's not an individual operator, a God-like operator that operates the world either. That is equally a misunderstanding or misinterpretation. So again, let's look at the question and let's look at the answer. We'll go a little more slowly and look up a couple of these words as we go along. So the questioner says, I am not confusing the body with the operator, this being the individual operator. I am not confusing the body with the operator. Rather, I am referring to Krishna's words in chapter 18, verse 61 of the Gita. The Lord, O Arjuna, dwells in the heart of every being, and he, by his delusive power, spins round all beings set as if on a machine. So Ramana Maharshi says, the functions of the body involving the need for an operator are born in mind. So he's saying this is just an interpretation of the experience. Right? The functions of the body involving the need for an operator are born in mind. And remember, he's going to continue here, but he means there is no operator. There's not the me, Regina, is not the operator. And God, there's not a God being that is the operator. There is no operator. The functions of the body involving the need for an operator are born in mind. Now here he says, since the body is jada, and jada is a not an English word, so let me look this word up. Jada is insentient. And funny, because every time I come across sentient, insentient, I have to look it up. I think insentient means not experiencing, but it's something I can't hold in my little head, so let's go ahead and look it up one more time. Yeah, it does. Insentient means incapable of feeling or understanding things, right? Insentient, incapable of feeling or understanding things. So like you might say the space in the room is insentient, right? The space in the room, although extremely useful, it doesn't feel anything. It's not thinking. It's not understanding. It's not judging, right? So the space in the room is insentient. So let's go back to Ramana Maharshi's response. The functions of the body involving the need for an operator are born in the mind. Since the body is jada, or insentient, a sentient operator is necessary. Now this is what he's saying the mind believes. He's not saying this is a fact. He's saying this is what the mind believes. The mind believes that the body is insentient and it needs an operator. And the operator, of course, would be the mind. And if you pause and look at this, you'll probably find that you do believe this. For example, let's imagine for a moment that you might perceive yourself as overweight, you know, like many Americans do these days. Well, if you perceive yourself as overweight, then don't you also think, I need to go on a diet, right? The body is insentient. You know, the body, you think, is not going to make a decision to lose weight on its own. I, the operator of this body, need to make that decision for it, right? And I, the operator of this body, need to make sure that the body eats the right foods and not too much foods and gets exercise so that I can lose the weight. So it's true, right, that we have the belief that the body is insentient and therefore needs an operator. All right, so let's just continue then. The functions of the body involving the need for an operator are born in the mind. The mind thinks this, right? Since the body is jada or insentient, a sentient operator is necessary. That's what the mind thinks. Because people think that they are jivas, and I think jiva means individual, but let's look it up just to double check. Yep, the individual. So, because people think that they are individuals, Krishna said that God resides in the heart as the operator of the individual. So, although he doesn't go any further with that comment, he's going to say even that's not true. What Ramana Maharshi is pointing out is that teachers often teach things that are not wholly true, but they're moving towards truth. Because the mind of the learner is not always as ready for the truth as it thinks it might be. And so teachings that are not wholly true and yet point to truth are a part of the process. You know, one example that I remember, I can't remember which of Eckhart Tolle's books I was reading, whether it was The Power of Now or whether it was, what's the one about the A New Earth? I don't remember which one it was reading, but one of those two books I remember reading near the beginning, he talked about feeling the inner body. He did a lot of sharing about that. So like if we were going to feel the inner body, we sit here, you know, we let the mind get quiet and we feel that inner body, you know, all of that energy inside the body. And we, you know, just concentrate our attention on that. And it's really quite nice because as you concentrate your attention on the inner body, your mind gets still. You know, in order to really feel that energy, you have to get very, very still. If the mind's active, you don't notice the inner body. So it's a great practice. But then, when you got to the end of that very same book, he said, there is no inner body. Right? There is no inner body. So the teaching about the inner body was a not wholly true teaching, pointing in the direction of truth. And so what Ramana Maharshi is about to say is that the reason Krishna taught, actually he's going to stop short of saying it, but the reason that Krishna taught that God resides in the heart and that God is operating you is so that you would understand that you, the mind in this case really, are not the operator, and you would surrender and just begin to observe, just watch. What is God going to do with me now? Wow, there's a decision that needs to be made. I wonder what decision God is going to make for this mind and what words will come out of this mouth. You know? And that's a wonderful, wonderful stepping stone thought. Because it does move us into surrender and it moves us into observer. We step back and quit trying to be in control of everything. I'm not the operator, God is. But you see, that's not wholly true either. And so what Ramana now is going to begin sharing is what is true. He says, because people think that they are jivas or individuals, Krishna said that God resides in the heart as the operator of the jivas. In fact, you ready? There are no jivas and no operator. Again, there's no individual operator. There's no God operator. There's no being that is assessing the situation, weighing options, and making a decision. Anything that appears to be that is merely mental chatter. Whether it's chatter about me being in charge or about God being in charge. In fact, there are no jivas, there are no individuals, and there is no operator. And he has a capital O here, right? There is no God operator, as it were, outside them. And then he says the self comprises all. And again, they've been using the symbol of going to the movies. And so that's why he continues in the way he's about to continue. The self comprises all. It is the screen, the pictures, the seer, the actors, the operator, the light, the theater, and all else. So if we go back to my sharing about the retreat house, right? Big Wall Ranch is consciousness. Some of those smaller ranches that we're looking at, they are also consciousness. The house by the lake is consciousness. The realtors are consciousness. The donors are consciousness. The ones who make offers on properties that we liked are consciousness. We, the witnesses of this, are consciousness. It's all consciousness. And it's unfolding in the way that it unfolds miraculously. You know, Nisargadatta said either everything is a miracle or nothing is. He called consciousness and the way it unfolds in manifestation as nature or natural. And he says that nature does not know of exceptions to her laws. So he prefers to say there are no miracles. But you either have to say everything is a miracle or there are no miracles. Because in reality, it's just consciousness unfolding in the way consciousness unfolds through the activity of the creative principle. There's no decision maker anywhere in the process. There's no operator anywhere in the process. And there's nothing present anywhere other than consciousness. Now, if you look at it that way, you know, again, the mind might say, wow, getting Big Wall Ranch, that would be the big miracle, right? If something happened that this contingent contract did not go through and some donor showed up that gave us the $3 million or one of us won the lottery and donated the $3 million and it all just happened and, you know, 4 months from now we're sitting on Big Wall Ranch as the owners, that's the big miracle. But if we go by what Nisargadatta said, either everything is a miracle or nothing is. You can't pick and choose and say this is a miracle. To get Big Wall Ranch is a miracle. To get no retreat house at all is definitely not a miracle, right? But it's all just consciousness unfolding as consciousness through the creative principle. So either every bit of it is a miracle or none of it is. And then again, he said he chooses to see it as nothing is a miracle. But if we listen to Peter Mayer, Peter Mayer chooses to see it as everything is a miracle. In fact, let me go ahead and just play that song for us. Let's see, where is it? Here we go. Peter Mayer.
When I was a boy each week, on Sunday we would go to church, pay attention to the priest, and he would read the holy word, and consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow, and say the only difference is, everything is holy now, everything. Everything is holy now. When I was in Sunday school, we would learn about the time Moses split the sea in two, Jesus made the water wine, and I remember feeling sad. Miracles don't happen still. Now I can't keep track. Cause everything's a miracle. Everything, everything, everything's a miracle. Wine from water is not so small. So the challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, but finding where there isn't one. When holy water was rare at best, it barely wet my fingertips, but now I have to hold my breath. Swimming in a sea of air. It used to be a world half there. Heaven's second rain hand me down.
You know, he said something in that song about wine from water is not so small, but an even greater magic trick is that anything is here at all. You know, many of you are familiar with my teaching of the four principles of God, and, you know, I've taught that teaching many, many times in many, many places. But one of the things that amazes me, and nobody even asks, which I think is also rather amazing, one of the things that amazes me is even though I can teach about the four principles of God, I can't teach how. And nobody ever asks how. And by that, I mean I can't teach how the first principle of God, and you know, all there is the first principle of God, and then out of that came the second principle of God consciousness. I can't teach how that happened. And if you're in gentle healing now, you're beginning NTI Romans, which is going to be all about how the second principle of God made a wish, which created the third principle of God, and then out of that came the fourth principle of God. But again, I can't tell you exactly how. You know, like I can tell you how to make chocolate chip cookies. You know, take this much flour and this much sugar and this much butter and, you know, and all of that. How? How did the first principle of God, how did the second principle of God come out of the first principle of God? And how was that wish born? And how did that create the third principle of God? And how does the interaction of consciousness with nothing through a third principle, create a fourth principle of God? How? We can't answer that. I mean, it's a miracle. It's just like he says in the song, it's a miracle that there's anything at all. You know, we don't look at the world as a miracle. You know, most people at some level look at the world as something has gone wrong, even if they're not metaphysical students. You know, I mean, I was looking at Yahoo and, you know, reading about different things that have happened, some funny and some not so funny. But, you know, the news is everything's wrong. You know, President Trump shouldn't have done this, and that man shouldn't have let his dog do this, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything's wrong. And what Peter Mayer is saying, and what Ramana Maharshi is saying is, everything's amazing. You know, it's all amazing. And if you can't even think about how it comes to be. There's no operator making it happen. It's all just happening. And there aren't many different things and many different kinds of people. It's all just consciousness. Both the subject and the object are consciousness. Amazing. So again, back to the answer. The self comprises all. It is the screen, the pictures, the seer, the actors, the operator, the light, the theater, and all else. You're confounding the self with the body. And imagine yourself the actor is like the seer representing himself as an actor in a cinema show. Imagine the actor asking if he can enact a scene without the screen. Such is the case of the man who thinks of his actions apart from the self. In other words, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous from the perspective of Ramana Maharshi, who sees the truth, who knows the truth. It's ridiculous that we should think we're doing anything. Yeah, Jay is talking. He says it occurred to him that even the atoms cannot be consciousness directly because they have many different varieties. It would have to be the principle from which the atoms form. And I know nothing about atoms, so I can't have such thoughts. But yeah, I mean, no matter how far you trace this thing back, right, no matter how much clarity you receive, you're going to come to a point where there isn't an answer. People often refer to that as the mystery. There isn't an answer. And that's why the whole damn thing is amazing. Every bit of it. Let's see, we have time to go into another question. So the questioner says, on the other hand, it is like acting the spectator to act in the cinema picture. So we must learn sleep waking. Sleep waking. Okay, so Ramana Maharshi says, actions and states are according to one's point of view. A crow, an elephant, a snake, each makes use of one limb for two alternate purposes. With one eye, the crow looks on either side. For the elephant, the trunk serves the purpose of both a hand and a nose, and the serpent sees as well as hears with its eyes. Whether you say the crow has an eye or eyes, or refer to the trunk of the elephant as a hand or a nose, or call the eyes of the serpent its ears, it means all the same. Similarly, in the case of the Janani, sleepwalking or waking sleep or dream sleep or dreaming wakefulness are all much the same thing. Now, the Janani, of course, is what we would call the enlightened one. And he says, I'm just going to simplify this. He says, just like you could call the trunk of the elephant's hand, or you could call it the elephant's nose. He says, in the same way, whether you call it sleep waking, waking sleep, dreaming wakefulness, it doesn't really matter. It's all the same thing. He He said, actions and states are only a point of view, which means a thought. So from the Janani's point of view, the Janani being the enlightened one, who sees only consciousness, everything is consciousness, regardless of its form or state. So for example, let's take what we might call two different people and put them in a room. One person is enlightened, genuinely enlightened, and the other person is as far as enlightenment as one can come. Right? Some people might call that tamasic. If there was a third enlightened person that was observing both, the enlightened one and the tamasic one, it sees the same thing. It sees consciousness as consciousness. It's not that the enlightened one is consciousness as consciousness and the tamasic one is not. And it's not as if the enlightened one is good and the tamasic one is bad. Or the enlightened one has achieved some goal and the tamasic one, you know, can't even find the goal. They're both consciousness being consciousness. In the way the consciousness is being consciousness right now. Literally, they are exactly the same. Just like the trunk could be a hand or a nose. Getting Big Wall Ranch or getting no retreat house at all is the same. It's consciousness being consciousness. That's amazing. You know, we judge so many things as good and other things as bad. Some things as miracles, other things as not miracles. You know, we could take illness as an example. If I'm ill, then spiritually, something is wrong. I must be believing something I'm not supposed to be believing. Can you hear the operator in that? And if a spontaneous healing occurs, a miracle has occurred. But in the eyes of the enlightened one, both are equally consciousness being consciousness. Both are equally consciousness being consciousness. And if you listen to the question again, you'll notice that the questioner, you can tell if you're looking at the book, there's an exclamation point. So you can tell that the questioner really feels he's having realizations. You know, he's listening to Ramana Maharshi with great sincerity, and he feels, okay, I get it. You know, I'm having realizations here. And he says, on the other hand, it is like asking the spectator to act in a cinema picture. So we must learn sleep waking. And Ramana Maharshi, who is sometimes more symbolic, right? For some reason, he's not coming down to meet this guy at all. He's staying in a very high state of sharing. And from that very high state of sharing, even the idea that we must learn sleep waking, or we must learn to abide as the self, or we must learn to stay in the now, or we must learn to be the observer. My God, there's still an operator in that. Who's going to learn that? Who's going to learn to abide as the self? Who's going to learn to be the observer? You see, there's still an operator. And Ramana Maharshi explains that it's all the same thing. Whether you are being the observer or completely believing your thoughts, it's still consciousness being consciousness. Your thoughts are consciousness, your emotions are consciousness, your mind is consciousness, your body is consciousness, the circumstances surrounding you are consciousness. How can we say one is good and one is bad if you know that it's all consciousness? The questioner says, but we have to deal with the physical body in a physical waking world. If we sleep while working is going on, or try to work while asleep, the work will go wrong. So, you know, what the, and this is back to what the, this particular questioner was arguing when we were talking a couple of weeks ago, is that, you know, I have to pay attention to my work. If I, the operator, do not pay attention to my work, you know, depending on what my work is, maybe I could cut off a hand or something, or crash a truck. And remember what we talked about 2 weeks ago. When paying attention to work happens, that is naturally arising. Paying attention is happening. When not paying attention to work happens, that is naturally arising. Not paying attention is happening. The idea that I am doing either is the error. Sure, sometimes paying attention happens. And sure, sometimes not paying attention happens. But both are equally naturally arising through consciousness, whether it's paying attention or not paying attention. So why have pride over paying attention and condemn myself for not paying attention when they are equally consciousness? So again, the questioner is saying, but we have to deal with a physical body in a physical waking world. You know, he's basically saying, but we have to be the operator. Because we do have an insentient body. And somebody has to operate this insentient body. Right? But if we, but we have to deal with a physical body in a physical waking world. If we sleep while work is going on or try to work while asleep, the work will go wrong. And Ramana Maharshi says, sleep is not ignorance. It is one's pure state. Wakefulness is not knowledge. It is ignorance. There is full awareness in sleep and total ignorance in waking. Your real nature covers both and extends beyond. The self is beyond both knowledge and ignorance. Sleep, dream, and waking states are only modes passing before the self. They proceed whether you are aware of them or not. That is the state of the Janani, or the enlightened one, in whom past the states of samadhi, waking, dream, and deep sleep, like the bulls moving, standing, or being unyoked while the passenger is asleep. These answers are from the point of view of the unenlightened one. Otherwise, such questions would not arise. So sleep is not ignorant. And the reason sleep is not ignorance is because there is no mind, you know, in deep sleep, right? There is no mind in deep sleep. Therefore, deep sleep is not ignorance. The waking state, that's where the mind is usually doing all of its chattering. That's the ignorance. However, both are equally arising in consciousness. One is not more consciousness than the other. Both are equally arising in consciousness. He says your real nature covers both and extends beyond. The self is beyond both knowledge and ignorance. They proceed whether you are aware of them or not. the questioner says, of course they cannot arise for the self. Who would be there to ask? But unfortunately, I have not yet realized the self. And Ramana Maharshi says, that is just the obstacle in your way. You must get rid of the idea that you are not enlightened and have yet to realize the self. You are the self. Was there ever a time when you were not aware of that self? And I'm going to start there again next time, I think. Yeah, I do, because otherwise this, I don't have time to continue. And when we do continue, it really comes out of this. And so if I do this now and then try to start someplace else next week, it's going to be disjointed. So, everything I just said, you know, I'm going to wait. I'm going to do this next week because I can see that everything that follows comes out of this, right? Based on the teaching that we're looking at, all of that just arose. Although there appears to be an operator looking and judging and making a decision. All of the looking, all of the thoughts that came, all of the decision-making that appeared to happen was just consciousness being consciousness. And I released the mic.